This is the QuoraCast. I'm Jeff Meyerson. My guest Jesse Lashley was in high school when he started using Quora and has made significant contributions to the site, with over 650 answers and 1,000 posts. Jesse is currently a college student pursuing design at Kendall College of Art and Design. Jesse Lashley, thanks for being on the QuoraCast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So let's get started with your education. Why don't you tell me about your high school education?
Well, I was homeschooled in high school and really all through, you know, middle school, elementary school. My mom always wanted, my parents have always been a little bit, I don't want to say weird, but a little bit kind of out of the mainstream. So they were always a little bit suspicious of public school education, I think. So that was something that they wanted me to do. And also partially for religious reasons, you know, because they're fundamentalist Christians.
So did you find that to be a sheltering experience, or did you not really have a frame of reference at that point?
Well, I guess it depends what you mean by sheltering experience. It was, there were a lot of things that I wasn't used to being homeschooled. And it's a stereotype that, you know, homeschoolers don't get out a lot, but in some ways it is a little bit true, or at least it was for me. So there were a lot of things that I wasn't used to.
So what were some of those things?
Like one of the things, we didn't go out for like movies and stuff a whole lot when I was growing up. So there are a lot of movies that I haven't seen and things like that.
How did you meet friends? Like, you know, how did you develop a social circle if you didn't have access to people your age through school?
Well, there were some programs that I would go to. Like, I was in Boy Scouts for a long time, probably about 10 years or so. I was in the Boy Scout program. And I did dog showing in 4-H. And
what's that? You did dog showing?
Dog showing, yeah, in 4-H.
That's really interesting. Like, tell me a little bit about that.
Okay, so we would practice every summer, and some of us would practice over the winter. Some of us weren't so good about keeping up during the school year.
Wait, like, what exactly is dog showing?
It comes in different forms. Like, there's different, I don't know what you would call them, different sports within dog showing. There's agility, you know, the things you see on TV where the dogs are jumping over the jumps and going over the A-frames and zipping around through tunnels and whatnot. And there's also, it's called confirmation, which is basically, if you've seen the Thanksgiving Day dog show after the parade, there's the handlers will walk the dogs around the ring, and then the judge will come around and check them to see how well they conform to breed standard. So there's a number of different things they check. You know, they'll check their teeth, they'll check their coat. Their coloring especially is important. There's different patterns of coloring that fit within the breed standard. So that we didn't do a whole lot of. We kind of replaced that with a different thing called dog showmanship, which is more focused on how well you present your dog, and that has to do with grooming and the different gaits you do when you're walking around the ring, and how well you know the answers to different questions about taking care of your dog and things like that.
That's interesting. So did you meet other people your age when you were doing this, or like that's?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Was there anything that you studied in homeschool that you think the average high school student in a public school would not have studied?
That's a good question. Most of the stuff was your normal high school stuff, you know, chemistry, you have physics, you know, math, writing, all of these things. You know, it's not, most of the core curriculum wasn't anything too out of the ordinary, but the nice thing about homeschooling is that you can work on your own schedule. So sometimes for me that was procrastinating more than I could have gotten away with otherwise. But there were also nice things about that, where if we wanted to, and the, you know, not really in high school so much, but in elementary school, if we wanted to take a field trip, say to, I don't know, like, I think one time I went to a fire station when I was little, and we could just take off in the middle of the day and do that, where if we were in public school, that wouldn't have been something that was as feasible, where we could just off and do something. So that was something that was interesting, and you hear with a lot of my public school friends that that was something that they were more constrained by. So
I, so one of the things that kind of bothered me in high school was this notion of reading books that are almost all, like, I was a big fan of English in high school. Like,
yeah,
I was,
me too.
I wasn't into I wasn't into the sciences as much. Like, since then I've gotten more into science, but one thing that bothered me was, like, there's, like, the canon. And the canon is, like, these books that are, like, sort of approved by, I don't know, some, like, Congress of public school people or whatever it is. But I can imagine maybe in when you're being homeschooled, it's a more customized curriculum, like whatever books your parents think are worth reading. Did you have any of that, or was it still just like read Catcher in the Rye, Great Gatsby?
Yeah, well, I never read Catcher in the Rye. Gatsby I read, Grapes of Wrath, Lord of the Flies. You know, all of the, I mean, if we're talking literature, I think there's probably not a huge difference. In terms of the curriculum, though, the textbooks, there is sort of a subculture within homeschooling where we have our own popular textbooks that aren't what the public school kids are using. So you'll have, especially in the groups that are doing it, like the Christian groups, you'll have...
So wait, are you saying, like, you weren't exposed to biology or, like, evolutionary biology?
Well, actually, evolutionary biology was pretty much non-existent in my education. So, I mean, if evolution was mentioned at all, it was only to say that, you know, there was no scientific evidence for it, and here's some books that talk about creationism. So that was the thing growing up, you know, and I didn't, and I think that's one thing where homeschooling can be harmful, is that I really did grow up in a bubble. You know, that's a real thing, you know. So there were a lot of ideas that I wasn't exposed to, and I had to do a little bit of self-directed learning in order to get a more rounded education. Like, everything that I know about evolution was stuff that I went out and researched myself. It wasn't anything that came from school.
Okay, so we'll get to that in a sec. So first, why don't we talk about your education since being homeschooled. So where are you attending college now?
I am going to college right now at Kendall College of Art and Design. So that's been fun.
And what are you studying?
I'm a digital media major, and I'm minoring in graphic design.
What was your, like, what compelled you to choose that?
Well, I'm kind of one of those people who wants to do everything, you know, so it's hard for me to confine myself to one major, which is part of why I'm minoring in graphic design, because I want to get as much of it as I can. But for a while, I was planning on majoring in industrial design because, you know, I would see the stuff that Johnny Ive was doing at Apple, and I was like, wow, that's amazing. And, you know, that's something that I want to do. And that, to a large extent, that's still true, right? But it's hard for me to pick one thing because I was also so fascinated by these user experience designers and software design. Like, for example, you know, the new version of iOS, iOS 7 that just came out. I can look at that and have tons of opinions about that, you know, pick out little minutiae of issues. So it's hard to, it is hard to pick just one major, but the reason that I ended up going with digital media is that I feel like in the future, software is going to become more important than hardware. And it is now to a certain extent, but we're seeing I think right now we're seeing a bit of a peak in industrial design of computing devices.
Is there a possibility that you might switch to something else ever? Like, you know, since you said, you know, you're interested in everything, like, is your heart really focused on doing design?
I don't know how focused I am on it. I mean, to a certain extent, yes, I think it's one of the most, and me tending to be a detail-oriented person, I think that's something that really appeals to me. But there are so many other things that I'm interested in that I want to learn more about, like economics, politics, and there are a lot of things I don't know enough about now, which one of the things that I really love about Quora is that you can get a sort of hit and run education about a lot of different topics. But I mean, would I ever switch my major? I don't know that there's anything, at least at my school, that appeals to me more than what I'm doing now.
So let's move on to talking about atheism. Because one reason I would consider you a notable Quora user is you've used the site as a means to answer some of your more complex questions about faith. So why don't you tell me about your experience using Quora to reason through these types of questions?
Okay. Well, there was one post that I did. I think the first thing that really I did publicly on Quora about atheism and religion was a post I did called, I gotta remember what it was called, Questions for an Evangelical Pastor. So I asked some prominent atheists on Quora for questions to ask my pastor at my church. So that was interesting, and I have to admit, I was a little bit disappointed because a lot of the responses were just things like, you know, you shouldn't be too confrontational, you know, you're not going to convince him, he's probably not going to convince you, so maybe you shouldn't just bother with it. So that was a little bit frustrating. So I went ahead and talked to my pastor anyway, and I did get a few questions. I don't want to make it sound like it was all that, but so I did talk to my pastor, and what I found was that his reasoning was mostly based on kind of unsupported premises or just obvious logical fallacies. And I asked a lot of follow-up questions on Quora after that interview, and they were all questions that had really easy answers that didn't line up with my beliefs and with his beliefs. So that was, I think, a big turning point for me.
What were some of those questions that, you know, in particular that, you know, you ended up asking your pastor?
Mostly it was just basic stuff like, how do you know that God exists? Things like that. How do you know that if God exists, that Christianity is the right religion? And mostly it all came back to intelligent design type things. So when my pastor looks at the universe, he sees evidence that he thinks requires a designer. But I think one of the things that he said that I pretty strongly disagree with is that intelligence and morality couldn't have come from a source that isn't also intelligent and moral. And it's on the surface, you know, it sounds like it makes a little bit of sense, but when you think about it, things come from other things that don't have the same traits all the time, right? So you'll have, one of my favorite examples is the frost patterns that you see on your windows. So if you see the frost patterns on your windows, does that mean Jack Frost exists? And they're complex patterns, right? They show evidence of design, at least in the Christian mindset. So does that require a designer? And we can look at nature and we can see, okay, these complex patterns occur naturally. So, and, you know, the obvious Christian response would be, well, God put the natural laws in place so that these things would happen. But, you know, at that point, it's a bit circular, right? And it's just something that you have to take on faith that this is an example of design still because God is real. But, and that's how we know that God is real. So
the circularity leads me to the question of whether you distinguish atheism from agnosticism.
Oh, okay. Well, see, that's
and
the thing.
That's just to say, like, the definition that I traditionally see is atheism is you strictly do not believe in a God, and agnosticism is
right.
Sort of you're shrugging, you don't really know, like, you think that there's no way to know.
Right, and that's the definition that I always heard growing up, you know, Baptist. You know, that's what Baptists tend to think of atheists, at least the Baptists that I knew. So I've found, though, as I've gotten more, I suppose, involved in the atheist community, I guess, on Quora and also in other places, that most self-described atheists don't use that definition, and a lot of them are also agnostic. So on Quora, you'll see a lot of people, a lot of atheists, who will define atheism as a lack of belief in a god or gods. That's, you know, Barry Hamp's classic line, right? That's how he always describes it. And I think that's a useful definition, because you can have a belief in God, or you can lack a belief in God, totally apart from whether or not you claim to know whether or not God exists. So I think it's sort of like a two-axis plane, where how much of a belief do you have in God, and how certain are you that you know that that belief is accurate? And I think even the terms that we have now, agnosticism, is a bit limited, because I call myself an agnostic atheist. And that, when I say that, what I mean is that I don't have a belief in God, and I also don't claim to know whether or not a God exists. But what I don't claim is that knowledge is not possible. I don't know whether or not knowledge of God is possible. I don't see how we could claim to know that at this point. But I think even beyond that, I never took religions like Islam or Hinduism seriously, because it was so obvious to me as a young child that, and I guess I'm still pretty young, so I'm not really old enough to say that now, but but it was obvious to me that Christianity was true and that these other religions were, you know, they were fake, right? These gods don't exist. I mean, I knew that. But so there wasn't ever a point where I actually did go around to all the different religions and check them all out individually, because I had already grown up with the idea that they were all fake. So that was almost a given for me, because I already wasn't taking them seriously.
What spurred you to start looking into this? Because at some point you had to have thoughts that led you to post on Quora this question about...
Right, yeah. I mean, even from a pretty young age, I had doubts. I would sometimes wonder whether or not I was right. And what if, you know, what if one of these other religions really is right? You know, I would have, I guess I would have called them then, you know, like, moments of weakness in my faith, where I wasn't, where I was, I was pretty sure, but I would think, you know, maybe I am really wrong about this. And that's one of the things now why I'm so, I wouldn't say upset with religion, but I do think that religion does have some bad effects on people that don't always get noticed. In particular, there was, because of these questions that I was having, there was a couple year period when I was about 11, 12, 13, where I would constantly think that I was going to hell because I couldn't erase these doubts out of my mind. And I couldn't believe entirely wholeheartedly, it seemed like. And that was all well, still believing that it was true, right? Because if I didn't genuinely believe it, I wouldn't have worried about going to hell, certainly. But I worried that I wasn't being sincere enough. And I think that's a harmful effect of Christianity that doesn't get reported on a lot.
And we talked a little bit earlier about the evolutionary stuff. Like, you aren't really exposed to the idea of evolution. And to me, understanding evolution is, it's such a fundamental concept to things that occur in everyday life. Like, you know, I have thoughts about evolution on an everyday basis. So was learning about evolution, like, you know, I don't know, reading stuff on Quora, or, you know, you said some of that was, you know, self-taught, self-study. Did any of that lead to, you know, your sort of serious pursuit into atheism?
Oh, absolutely. And in the specific subgroup that I was in one of those very right-wing, conservative, you know, six-day literal creation, you know, that kind of group, right? I was very much on the fringe. And so for me, creationism was obviously part of Christianity. And I think a lot of people do see it that way. At the same time, though, there are a lot of Christians who believe in evolution, you know, who accept that as the best scientific explanation that we have. But I think there's fundamentally a problem with being a Christian and accepting evolution. And that if you're going to be believing in an intelligent, all-powerful, you know, loving God who takes pride in his work, I don't see how you can reconcile that with evolution. Evolution, I see it as a very elegant theory in that it's a succinct description of the things that we see in reality. And it's a small idea that covers a big range of things. But I think it's not as elegant as what we would see if there were actually an intelligent creator.
Like, the best book on evolution that I've read, and I haven't even read the whole thing, but have you heard of The Selfish Gene?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the motif there is just kind of one of abstraction. Like, it starts with, you know, these little molecules, little things moving around, and then they gradually abstract up into stuff, and along the way it's kind of like a machine learning type of process. But that's not the only way that, you know, you could potentially have a system develop. And, you know, that's an interesting way of looking at it, that, you know, if somebody were to actually design the process that led to our creation, you know, maybe it would be a more elegant process.
Right. I mean, for something that came out of nature through naturalistic processes, evolution is amazing. That idea is really powerful. But for something that comes from an intelligent creator, honestly, I'm not that impressed. I think he could do better.
Fair enough. All right, well, let's talk about Quora. When did you find out about it?
That was a little ways back now. That's probably a good 2 years, 2.5 years ago. I read about it on TechCrunch, actually, when the whole Core is going to change the world hype was at its height.
And, okay, so you're 17 now, so that so you're 18 then. Oh,
Eighteen.
So you're 15 or 16 back then. So what have you discovered through Quora in the meantime?
Wow, tons and tons of things. It's almost a joke at this point among my family and friends. Whenever I think of a question, it immediately goes to Quora. So anything that comes up in my day-to-day life, I'll just think, oh, that's interesting. I'll ask about it on Quora. That's the first thought that comes into my head. So really, it's a wide range of things. I've learned things, you know, about, well, first of all, about atheism and religion like we were talking about, but also about art and design, politics, economics, startups and businesses, a lot of that on Quora, and just a huge range of things, and including, I think one of the useful things is that in my newsfeed, I'll see a lot of almost trivia questions where I'll learn a fun little fact that I would never have come across otherwise. So I have a huge collection of trivia that comes in useful, surprisingly useful.
How do you curate what shows up in your newsfeed? Like, how do you have particularly high standards for who you choose to follow? Like, do you unfollow people ever?
Let's see. Right now I'm following, I think, about 4,500 people. And I believe over 9,000 topics. So I have a really wide range of stuff. And I think that works for me, though. I don't have to unfollow people. I don't have to block people. And I think the reason is that each individual person makes up a relatively small amount of my newsfeed, so that when you average it all together, I get just a smooth, wide range of things that I might be interested in.
Yeah, wisdom of the crowd type of thing.
Yeah, kind of like when you see those ideal beauty faces. Have you ever seen those where they average all the faces together and then you get this perfect symmetrical face? It's a bit like that. That's how I think of it.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's the strategy I take on Twitter. Like, I follow pretty much everybody on Twitter. On Quora, I've been a little more hesitant. The main thing is, like, well, there's two things. One is, like, I don't have as good a sense of their algorithm. Like, I don't know how finely tuned their algorithms are, and there's certain people that I really want a lot of their material. Like, yeah. I don't want to miss something. It sounds ridiculous, but I don't want to miss something like Mark Bodnick does, or something that Ben Golub does. Like, there's certain power users that I'm just like,
right,
I need to see everything that this person does, because it's just, you know, I'm that much of a fan of, or at least I have that much correlated interest with what they do. And right. I worry that if I follow too many people or topics, it's just going to be like my signal-to-noise ratio is going to be suboptimal.
That makes sense. I feel like I get a lot of people in my feed like that. And I think as time has gone on and I've been on Quora, that I've found more and more people who I'm a fan of, and now I just want to follow all of these people. And maybe that's not something that we can do well because of just how much these people are posting. But I don't know. I mean, there's still a core group of people, and it could just be a confirmation bias sort of thing where I already know to look out for these people, and so I notice them more in my feed. But there are a core group of people who I interact with a lot on the site, even in the 4,500 people that I'm following. So
Yeah, it could also be their algorithms are just even better than I'm giving them credit for.
Yeah, it could absolutely be that. I have no idea how their algorithm.
How has Quora changed you outside of your behavior on the site? Like, has it weakened or strengthened your social skills outside of the internet?
That's a good question. I don't know how much it's actually affected my social skills. I've always been kind of a hardcore introvert, I guess you could call me. And I still am that. It's always, for me, my social skills are something that kind of come into play more as I get to know people. So, but I don't know how much that's been affected by Quora specifically.
And how has interacting with people across a wide age group changed your point of view?
That's definitely been interesting. I feel like, I don't want to sound snobbish, but I feel like it's more older people who like me more, who are more impressed with me. And that sounds, you know, like, it sounds like I'm setting myself up to be some kind of child prodigy or something. And I don't really think of myself that way, or at least I try not to. But I guess that older people tend to help me feel more optimistic about myself, where maybe the people who I know in my age range are just not as, I don't know the word for it.
I mean, I was actually going to say, it's like, that is something that I like about your personality on Quora is, it's kind of like an unabashed optimism. Where would you like to see Quora go? Because it's kind of, I feel like it's kind of at, you know, it's a very constantly changing site.
I almost wonder if Quora knows exactly where they want to go. I'm not sure that they entirely do, to be honest, because I think there's a huge potential in Quora, or at least something similar to Quora. And I think, and maybe this is me being that wide-eyed, optimistic kid again, but I think that something like Quora makes a lot of sense as a core backbone of an entire society. And that's it's a little bit crazy. Let me kind of break down what I mean a little bit. I think something like Quora, where you have differing opinions and there's a conversation about things, and where the expectation is that you're going to use objective evidence to support your arguments. I think something like that makes a ton of sense, both as the future of education, but as the future of decision making in general. You don't have politicians who have party lines. What you have are politicians who have a process. And that process is evidence-based rational thought. And they're required to show their work. That's an expectation, is that they're going to be able to back up what they're saying. And they have to do it publicly. And so I think that would be something cool. I don't know how something like that falls into place, or if that's something that would make any kind of sense for Quora as we know it today. But I think that there's really a huge opportunity for something like this, because the fact of the matter is that people believe a lot of crazy things, and they do things for crazy reasons. And I think that anything we can do to help people make better decisions is a really good thing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All right, well, Jesse Lashley, it's been a pleasure.
And, yeah, thank you.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity to interview you.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was fun.
Thanks for listening to the QuoraCast. If you have any questions or comments, or have any suggestions about the podcast, let me know on Quora.